You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism, broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
Thank you, Scott. This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel, broadcasting live worldwide from South Florida. Today, we are pleased to present this special broadcast on Jordan. Since this is a multimedia presentation, we urge those listening to go to our website, ttrn.com, where you can read the articles in depth, along with some terrific photos and video. My guests today are Gisele Abrajeo, Marketing Manager of the Jordan Tourism Board from North America, Elai Sadawi, President of Sunnyland Tours, Pierre Wolf, host of American's Dining and Travel Guide, travel journalist Peter Flaherty, when we come back.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
This segment of the show is brought to you by SureCruise.com, your online cruise superstore, and in part by USA 3000, offering low-cost fares from St. Petersburg, Orlando, Fort Myers, and Fort Lauderdale to seven cities. You can check out their super specials by going to our website, ttrn.com. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Gisele Abrajeo of the Jordan Tourism Board and guide extraordinaire. Welcome to Talking Travel, Gisele.
Thank you, Roy. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'm just kind of stumbling over the shows here this morning. But
what is going on with you?
Well, I just think I'm very nervous because you're on there and waiting for me to do a pirouette, and that's very difficult to talk. I can't pat my head and rub my belly at the same time.
I know, and I'm sure it's not going to be the same as you did in Wajiram, right?
And we have it on video as well, don't we?
Exactly.
It was wonderful. It was amazing that I actually made it all the way around. But we did, and we had a wonderful journey, Gisele. And let's, for the audience, tell them a bit about what it is that the Jordan Tourism Board does.
Okay, we are here to promote Jordan as a tourism destination in North America. So we cover U.S. and Canada, and we started pretty soon in Mexico as well. But the main reason for us to be here is to educate people on our destination. Unfortunately, the lack of knowledge is huge in this market in North America, and we are trying to change that.
And doing a great job of it. I know you travel back and forth at least once a month, I assume.
Yeah, or twice sometimes.
Or twice, yes, with bringing the media people over there, mm-hmm. and giving them a taste of what the country is all about. What we plan to do today is to cover a lot of that. We have Mr. Elai Sadawi, who is the president of Sunnyland Tours, who is going to tell us about some of the programs he offers. He'll be on the show. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Pierre Wolf is going to be with us, and he's going to chat about the thing he is very familiar with is the wonderful food we experience, the hotels, and so we'll touch on that a little bit later in the show. And then, of course, Peter Flaherty is going to touch on the history, and Bob Fisher is going to cover some of the plans of the government and talking about how they are going to plan a long-term plan for mm-hmm. tourism in the country of Jordan. Tell us a little bit more about what actually the tourism organization does. I know you go. I know you hold these seminars. Tell us a little bit about those.
We do. We work on. We try to target the different markets, and the way that we do that, we participate on road shows, trade shows, and consumer shows. All about the travel shows. One of the things that we do, it's at least once a year, we go to different cities and we host events to tour operators and travel agents, once again, to educate them on the destination and help them to learn how to sell the destination. We do that once in the U.S., and we usually go to 5 to 10 cities, and we do that once a year in Canada. Again, we go try to go 4 to 5, 6 cities in Canada. It is very helpful because then we have the trade more professional on selling Jordan. The other thing that we do as well with the trade, we work with them on co-op. So we try to marketing the destination together. It's because there's no point of only us promoting the destination and no one is selling it. So we always need to go together. It works very well, the partnership that we have with the trade.
And when you're talking about co-op, you're talking about co-op advertising?
Can be advertising, can be brochures, can be events that they host to their clients, and whatever, it's good for them to sell the destination more and more.
Now, for the travel agents that may be listening, do you offer a shell brochure that they can then overprint, or do you just come up with
the travel agents? No, we don't have a shell brochure. Several tour operators they do,
right,
and they work with us on that.
Right.
Travel agents, we usually send them a lot of materials so they can send to their clients, DVD brochures, posters, and we give them presentations so they will be able to know better about each and each market that we target in Jordan. We try to work really on the educational piece of it. And partnerships. Sometimes we have travel agents also joining us in trade shows or road shows or consumer shows.
Right. And they can get all that information. The agents can come directly to the Jordan Tourism website, which is seejordan, isn't it?
Seejordan.org, or they can also call us at 1-877-SEA-JORDAN.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the Jordan mission in the sense of sustainable tourism and what approach you're taking to market Jordan itself.
Well, on sustainable tourism, I would say that Jordan is very aware of sustainable issues and that they try to do everything that they can to make sure that things improve in the country.
Right.
We have several sustainable tourism projects with the RSCN, Royal Society for the Conservation of Nature, that they cover all the nature reserves in Jordan. One very successful case at Dana Reserve. They started that sustainable project over there where the reserve was, I don't want to say, wasn't target as a tourism destination, and today it is, and they have a great success. And what they did pretty much is they got the village around the reserve involved, and today they are extremely independent and trained and a part of the success of the site.
And that was part of the presentation I think we saw while we were there, did we not?
You did, with the Royal Society. Yes, you did at the Wild Jordan.
Right.
Besides that, we have several other ones. We have the Tibet Zaman, that it's a village in Petra that was from the late Ottoman Empire, and then at one point was abandoned, and right now it's a 5-star hotel. Like a beautiful character, and the village, once again, the social development that happened there, it's unbelievable. So,
well, we certainly experienced some nice hotels while we were there. That was,
yeah, you did,
and they did a wonderful job, and everybody was so friendly and accommodating. We couldn't have asked for more, and unfortunately, there's this great misinterpretation out there of Jordan as being an unsafe destination because of the surrounding countries. And what are you doing to overcome that at the moment?
We are trying. It's unfortunate because the fear factor is still something that we have to deal with, and it's a big challenge for us because CNN doesn't help us much.
Well, they don't help anybody much, actually.
Yeah, but what we are realizing is the lack of knowledge is much more. When they learn about the destination, the fear factor is nothing compared to, you know, they really end up going and getting excited about going. So we really try to work with the travel writers, with journalists, with the major publications in U.S., all over U.S. and Canada, to make sure that we balance all the I would say, a lot of wrong information that it's distributed about the Middle East.
Yeah, the negative side of it.
The negative side. And Jordan, it's really an oasis in that region. It's so peaceful, so stable, so friendly.
We certainly found it that way, and we're going to chat more about that later on in the show. You are targeting niche markets at the moment. Is that correct?
Yes. And the reason for that, we have a new tourism strategy that was launched in 2004. And goes up to 2010. And as you were able to experience, right, Jordan is a very little tiny country, but the diversity of the country, it's unbelievable, right?
Absolutely.
Every 30 minutes that you drive, you have a completely different experience. And that is why we are able to target niche market. So we can target the history, archaeology. We have then the wellness and healthy market that are all the spas. We have the oldest natural spa on earth, the Dead Sea. So then we can also target the eco-adventure. We have beautiful nature reserves. You think that Jordan is only desert, but it's not true. Like, we have forests on the north of the country, and it's beautiful. It's very greeny. And then we also have the mice niche market. It's the meetings, incentives, conference, and events that Jordan is a fantastic, not only because it's a small culture, so you can go everywhere in a short time, but we have the whole infrastructure to host events, big events, small events, conference, and incentive. And there you go. We have cruising because we have one port at the Red Sea, fantastic Aqaba. And what else? The religious market. If you think about that, Jordan is the bulk of the Old Testament. Most of the Old Testament happened in Jordan, and
Absolutely.
People don't realize that Jordan is the Holy Land.
Exactly. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, realize that until you experience it and you begin to really understand the religious background.
Mm-hmm.
And also, needless to say, the archaeology is the, one of the bigger items.
It is. It is an open-air museum, I believe. Jordan, everywhere that you go, you have remaining from every single civilization at one point in time. So it is overwhelming. And how about the people, right?
The people were wonderful.
Yeah, they are fantastic. So genuine and so hospitable.
The food was great, and everybody was so hospitable. Mm-hmm. We had a wonderful time. In fact, a lot of people Skype me from over there just to see how I'm doing, so they're following up on it. So just goes to show you that one really needs to needs the experience to understand it. And I believe you're doing a great job. Your organization is super. We can't thank you enough for the experience, and I just wish you all the best, and we're going to do our best today to inform people a lot about it. And, of course, on our website there will be some great slideshows. There will be the movie that was narrated by Peter Greenberg.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be all up on our site today, and people can read the articles more in depth as we get into it. Gisele, I thank you very, very much, and we hope to be talking to you again soon, or at least seeing you again soon. And I'm going to say bye for now.
Thank you, Roy, and we really appreciate you guys becoming a great ambassador for the country.
It's certainly our pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah,
bye for now, love.
Bye.
Great gal. Great. She was a great guide for us and very knowledgeable about her country. Let's see. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, We're going to bring on my friend Peter Wolf, who is going to fill us in on the food and restaurants and some of the places we've been. So hang in there.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
This week on the show, we spoke with radio host Pierre Wolf of America's Dining and Travel Guide about his background and how he got into broadcasting. And, well, today he has graciously accepted to join us in this special tribute to Jordan. Pierre, welcome once again to Talking Travel.
Well, welcome indeed to you, and you're doing a great job, and certainly the highlight of the trip, or at least one of them, was not just Jordan, but meeting you was certainly a great pleasure, and your comrades that work with you, like Bob Fisher and Peter Flaherty. Of course, I had Mr. Five Star with me as my co-host, Mr. Ron Kreider, and I'm certainly delighted to be on TTRN.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Pierre. And for those that were listening last week, are obviously aware that food, hotels, and restaurants were a big part of your background. And I thought today, since we shared a lot of that and went to some, stayed at some great hotels and ate some great food, that we might just chat about that with your great expertise.
Well, the Jordanian Tourism Bureau really went overboard by allowing us to savor and enjoy some of the great hotels as well as restaurants. And I must tell you, Roy Lowy, that I was surprised at the quality of the restaurants and the beauty of the hotels. Why am I surprised? I don't know. I didn't expect it in Jordan.
Well, we didn't really know what to expect, did we, actually?
Yeah, we didn't know what to expect is correct in regards to anything, but since we had not been there. I've visited the Middle East previously. Some of it was not voluntarily, but I was in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Iran during World War II as a very young kid. And I don't know, the hotels like the Marriott and Mövenpick were just outstanding. Mövenpick is a Swiss company, and some of the decor was just so well done, and it was in line with the surroundings and the place in which you found yourself.
Absolutely, and in fact, we started out in Amman at the Marriott. It was
correct.
Really our first touch of, or taste, I should say, of Jordan itself.
Now, the breakfast, I must say, in most hotels, the Mövenpick and Marriott hotels, Marriott, of course, an American company. It was operated, I believe he was Danish or Swedish, the general manager or the VP that we met. But
right.
The breakfast basically goes along the lines of an American breakfast buffet, or that you would find on one of the better cruise ships.
Right.
But then we were taken in Amman, which, by the way, is a very interesting large city, and it happens to be the capital of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. We were invited to the El Din Lebanese restaurant, a very attractive place. And let me say this, whether it was lunch or dinner, you normally start off with meze. Meze is M-E-Z-E, or it could be spelled differently in various Arab dialects, but meze are the appetizers. And I do not think that we ever missed out on hummus and kibbeh and full and tabbouleh and some of those things that you will find here in Middle Eastern restaurants right here in our own United States.
The appetizers were overwhelming.
Absolutely.
In fact, you know, we know today that one could make a meal of appetizers, but in Jordan, never mind a meal, it was a feast.
Indeed, and you know, you will see these items right here, I repeat that, in the United States, and many people that come from the Middle East search out restaurants. We have a number of them here in Denver, Colorado, where I broadcast normally my shows and do every Sunday from 3 to 5. It's America's Dining and Travel Guide, if I may put in a little plug. And it's on your site on TTRN. You will see a caricature of a guy called Pierre Wolf, and you will see it right there on TTRN Travel Talk Radio Network. But on to the food. Once you work yourself through these hors d'oeuvres, and also, I must say, the beauty of the restaurants were also surprising to me, the decor and the layout. Why I didn't expect it, I don't know.
And service, to mention.
Yes, and not only that, the service, and very, very attentive. Of course, when you are with an official group like the Jordanian Tourism Bureau, to whom we owe this fantastic trip, and Giselle and Ibrahim and the organization itself, they of course, the restaurateurs are aware to impress people that are travel correspondents and radio correspondents like I am and like you are.
And knew what to order as well.
Exactly. Now, dishes that we had, for instance, at El Din in Amman were beef shawarma, rotisserie sliced marinated ribeye. That's what that is about. You never escape actually dishes like kebabs, and they're made normally out of lamb, as most people know. Pork is not something that the Muslims are allowed to eat if they observe any kind of religious culture. So and Jewish people, if they're Orthodox, also do not eat pork. So you will find lamb and beef, kebabs of various nature. And then you remember the place in Amman called the Blue Fig.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. That's exactly. We had dinner there, didn't we?
Yeah, but the casual outdoor restaurant with music, and that was boy meet girl type thing, entirely different from a formal restaurant.
Right.
And I don't remember what I ate because I just looked at the women. Having a good time, and we had great conversation going along with that.
Funny you should say that, because I found it quite interesting that there was a very young, upscale-looking crowd in
there. Indeed. Young is the underline, both men and women. As I said, boy meet girl, that's not men meet woman. You know, they're young people enjoying the outdoor, and it was quite balmy.
Fashionably dressed.
You know, we haven't mentioned the weather throughout was very pleasant and certainly not overwhelmingly hot as you might expect it to be in the Middle East. You have to remember also that Amman is something like, I believe it's 3,000 to 4,000 feet above sea level. And by contrast, when you then visit the Dead Sea, you happen to be 400 feet below sea level. So what a contrast, all in one country.
Exactly.
So dinner, you know, we had at a restaurant called Khan Zaman. It's not really important, but if you want to take notes, K-A-N and then capital Z-A-M-A-N, Khan Zaman, a typical Middle Eastern cuisine, which again would include the meze, small starters like ful and hummus, I already mentioned that, and the tabbouleh salad, which never fails to appear on any of the buffets or offerings. It's made with bulgur, mint, and parsley, and tomatoes, of course, beautiful tomatoes. They do grow in the northern part of Jordan. We are told that it is quite green, and that a lot of produce is produced in Jordan, even for export. Well, we didn't see much of that.
Well, we did in that.
I don't remember seeing too many green fields. What we saw mostly was desert, rocks, and mountains, right?
Well, yeah, but we went to that one market where it was incredible.
Yeah,
was,
we went to the main market in Amman.
Right.
And that was quite an experience. By the way, Roy, when we travel, we never fail to go to markets.
Right.
It really tells you what the country is all about. And there's an excitement in markets to see the vendors trying to attract the potential client or customer, to attract them to their stand, from dates to figs to tomatoes and artichokes and anything at all that you can imagine. And it was very, very, very interesting.
Well, and the other thing that we found interesting, I know you and I did, some of the others were a bit more familiar with it, that in most of these restaurants, certainly in the evening, everyone sat around with these shisha. I think that's the pronunciation.
You're talking about the
pipes,
water pipes.
The water pipes. And
right,
in
yeah.
fact,
people don't know the word. And we actually bought Giselli, who was on before me today on Travel Talk Radio
right.
Network. She actually got a present from you, right?
Well, from us.
From us.
Yeah. And was it at the Khan Zaman that we all sat around the table and you, I think it was the first time you've tried one of those pipes.
Indeed. I had tried it in, must admit, in Egypt also on my recent trip, and that was earlier this year.
Well, maybe that's why you look so professional.
I wanted to also not forget about a unique experience. Most people that are listening to TTRN Travel Talk today, a special on Jordan, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan in the Middle East, and we weren't afraid to go there. We're not afraid. If our time comes up, it's there. I wanted to say Petra is so well known. That area where the treasury, which is really not a treasury but a tomb, and all the surrounding area where we also ate in a fabulous Arab Middle Eastern type restaurant where you sat on a camel. I don't know whether you went racing, actually. I refused to do it, but some of these sore butts.
But we had a lovely lunch at that place, and that's, I think, where we parked our one-eyed horse.
Exactly. But Petra also offered us another experience, namely the Petra Kitchen.
Oh, that was absolutely amazing.
They took us to a cooking school, Roy Loy, and as you know, each one of us was given an apron and a task under the supervision of not only the owner of the school, which happens to be an American lady.
Absolutely, yeah.
13 years she has been in Jordan, and she opened also a travel company. And aside from that, she owns this unique cooking place called the Petra Kitchen.
Right. The travel company is called Jordan Tours, I believe.
There we go. And
yeah.
There I made the Arab salad, which consists of tomatoes and peppers and mint, which is always seen, and cucumbers and parsley and salt and a little lemon juice.
Can you pronounce the name of it?
Yeah. It's tabbouleh.
Tabbouleh, exactly.
Right. And then fattoush, which is cucumber and tomato salad. Fattoush.
Right.
That would be then served with cucumber with a bit of Arab bread and radishes and garlic and vinegar and lettuce, tomatoes that are beautiful, salt, pepper, and olive oil, and that's how you put it together. Petra Kitchen also served a dish called galaya bandura, which is tomatoes, olive oil, garlic, and pine nuts, which you brown in olive oil and do that. Another dish is called ful madmas, and that's also done with fava beans, lemon juice, chopped water, and cloves, and so forth. Tabbouleh is the salad I made. I already mentioned that. It uses bulgur, which is available in any Middle Eastern store here in the United States. Cracked weed, to be exact.
Right.
And then the main course was lamb shoulder called mansaf. And it's cut in small pieces. And each one of us was given a task, including making lentil soup, shurbat adas. That's how the Arab term is. Lentil soup, of course, goes way back to biblical times. You remember who sold his birthright?
Tell me.
Esau.
Oh,
sold his birthright for a dish of what? Lentil soup.
Soup, yeah.
And that's why, in that part, shurbat adas in Arabic, Shurbat Adas. It's lentils and salt and oil and parsley and a little garlic I put in there. They put cumin in there and onions, water and pepper, and you could, if you were not religiously restricted, you could put some pork hocks in there, and they certainly will give it a great flavor in addition to what I
exactly.
just mentioned.
Exactly. Now, we're running a little bit out of time here, but I'd like, let's touch on that wonderful meal we had in the Wadi Rum Desert.
Yeah, now, that is a very special meal, and the Wadi Rum Zarb, a Z-A-R-B dinner, it's like a luau, and we were tented in Bedouin tents in which we slept. A magnificent experience in a restricted area. It's sort of like a national park surrounded by some really odd-shaped mountains, but they did something that would be similar to a luau. And that means they took lamb and put it into a gunny sack and buried it into a hole in the ground over charcoal. And it would cook just like a suckling pig would be done in Hawaii. That's why I compare it to a luau. And then we enjoyed that type of meal along with it. I think it was more mutton than it was lamb. But the surrounding areas gave us the appetite and the zest and the enjoyment of being in an area where only Bedouins usually bed themselves under the stars. A terrific experience with all the dinners at the fabulous Mövenpick and Marriott hotels, which somehow also were along the line of European-American type food.
In fact, maybe one day we can just cover some of that, because we're not going to have time to cover some of the meals we had at the hotels, but, I mean, they were really spectacular. And, of course, while we were in the Wadi Rum Desert under the stars, we were being serenaded as well. So it was a marvelous experience. Everybody was good company, we had a wonderful time, and we thank the Jordan Tourist Board and everybody else that was involved for making that happen for us. Pierre, I've got to run. Thank you very much, and hope to be chatting with you soon.
Indeed a pleasure, and I hope to see you on America's Dining and Travel Guide. Continue with a great, interesting show. We'll talk soon. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now. Pierre Wolf from America's Dining and Travel Guide. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by the president of Sunnyland Travel, Mr. Eli Sadawi. So hang in with us.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Mr. Eli Sadawi is the president of Sunnyland Travel Company, which is Sunnyland Tours, actually, that offers packages and special tours to Jordan. Welcome to Talking Travel, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on the
air. You have a great background in Sunnyland Tours. I was looking at the overview, and then you actually grew up in Lebanon, and as a young man, and were working for one of the large tour operators, I'm assuming over there. And then when you came to the U.S., you started Sunnyland and became one of the largest specialists to Egypt and the Middle East, amongst other things.
That's exactly right. We have been. I personally have been in the tourist business, specializing in the Middle East originally, since 1964, so that it's a long time to be in this business. So we have good experience in operating programs to the entire Middle Eastern area, and we have been offering trips to Jordan for over 40 years as well.
Now, earlier today, we spoke to Gisele from the Jordan Tourism Board and also a host from another TV show that participated in a media trip that we were on over there. And, of course, the biggest thing to overcome is convincing people that Jordan is the peaceful middle of the East. And we had a wonderful time. Everybody was friendly. Obviously, the country is a marvelous place to visit. How do you approach that these days?
Well, the biggest testimony that we get are from clients who visited Jordan recently. And without a doubt, we always get recommendation letters attesting to the beauty of the country,
yes,
the immense archaeological sites and historical and Christian relics that are abundant in the country, and how safe and pleased they were with their decision to visit Jordan. As you mentioned, some people have some reservations about traveling in areas of the Middle East because of some hostilities in the past, but never in Jordan itself. It has been very safe to travel. There has been some incidents last year or recently, but it was not targeting the foreigners or the tourists. It was a local wedding where there has been some problems by a woman who threw in a bomb and caused some casualties among the people who were attending the wedding. But it has nothing to do with the tourist activities, and it has, although it's unfortunate, but this is one isolated incident, and for the past 30, 40 years, peace prevails in Jordan. The people are very hospitable to foreigners, to tourists, and the government is very keen at providing the best security possible, and the area is very safe to travel and visit, and the clients who have taken trips to Jordan recently or come back, and I would be more than happy to supply copies and references of for these clients who toured with us in Jordan, testifying how beautiful the place is and how peaceful it is, and how pleased they were to have made the decision to visit such a beautiful country with abundant historical and religious shrines.
And it's a great niche market for just those very reasons, whether it's religious, archaeology. There's so many aspects of the country as we found it. Course, if they go to your website, I notice that there are a lot of great testimonials to exactly what you've just said.
Exactly, and our function as a tour company also is to provide the means for individual travelers taking a trip to the Middle East to be in the company of other tourists from Europe and other parts of the United States, whereby you organize an escorted, guided motor coach tour that operates every week. Features visits to all the important historical and archaeological sites of Jordan, and by doing so, we provide the ability to have these individual clients book on an independently and be joined on a group tour, so that they benefit with the group discount packages on the land arrangements, as well as on the cost of the airline tickets flights from the United States to Jordan.
I'm looking at the moment at your one of your tours. It's a group tour, I'm assuming, and it's the Royal Tour of Jordan. This one happens to be 9 days, and it's a weekly departure on Saturdays. Now, let's just go through, if you will, for our audience, because I think it's very important that people want either escorted tours at the moment, especially to those areas. They want to be with people who know the area, and let's, if we can, just go through. Would the Royal Tour be the one you suggest we can just kind of walk through to give people?
Yeah, that's basically the tour program that our company, Sunnyland Tours, operate on a weekly guaranteed departures year-round. Issue of joining individuals to the same tours.
Right. Now, you started out in New York, and you fly to Amman. Now, do you use different airlines or basically a Royal Jordanian?
Well, this particular tour, we use Royal Jordanian Airline because it has the most direct flight and the lowest airfares that one can possibly have. There are other methods of getting to Jordan with the different airlines, and some clients use their frequent flyer miles, and they have their own tickets, and we just hook them up with the tour when they get to Amman. But for passengers who are seeking the lowest cost of air transportation from the U.S. to Jordan, Royal Jordanian Airlines provide the daily service and also the lowest possible airfare. And we, in turn, contract with the group rate discounts by virtue of putting individual passengers and joining form a group, even though they are not traveling originally together. We join these passengers to travel on one particular weekly day, which is Saturday, and they will benefit from the group airfare that we contract with the airlines for that, affording substantial savings to these clients who would be traveling together on a locally escorted tour. In other words, there will be an escort guide that will be with them throughout their stay. For 8 nights visiting all of the sites in Amman, Jordan, Amman and Petra, you know, Madaba, the Dead Sea, Jericho, you know, Jerash, Ajlun, and all of the historical and archaeological and biblical sites are all covered in that program.
Right, and it
and
looks like you
and it's very economic. And,
right, it looks like you base basically in Amman and then do day trips out to the various places like the Dead Sea.
Correct, and in fact, they do spend 2 nights in Petra.
Yes,
at Wadi Rum. There's hardly any site that is not covered on that program. The bus and the guide. And the escort are traveling with this with the group, and it's not large groups. Sometimes we end up with maybe 8-9 passengers, so that the benefit of getting the attention and from the guide and escorts are quite impressive. It's better when you have a smaller group. There will be more less time wasted at sites and movement, you know, when it's better when you have a normal lower group participants on the bus and the tour.
Now, those that would be interested that are in our audience, I'm assuming they can go to sunnylandtours.com. And is there also an 800 number, or do you primarily do it online?
Yes, our toll-free number is 800-783-7839. Additionally, they can log in on our website and go to either sunnylandtours.com or go to jordanhuddeals.com, jordanhuddeals.com site with all the tour offerings and the information relative to traveling in Jordan.
I thank you very, very much for taking the time to join us, and it was certainly on short notice, and we certainly appreciate the information that you're sharing with us.
Appreciate your call, and if anybody who's interested in getting information on Jordan or traveling to Jordan or any other area in the Middle East, we have the staff and the expertise to provide all the necessary information and sales tools.
I thank you very much for that.
Thank you, sir.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to go to break. And you're listening to Talking Travel on TTRN.com. When we come back, travel journalist and director of program development, Peter Flaherty.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, continuing on our tribute to Jordan, we are pleased to have travel journalist Peter Flaherty, who is also our director of program development, join us. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks, Troy.
You know, I said I wanted to take a moment to, first of all, thank the very special people who were part of this amazing journey, and first the staff at Tourism Board in North America who made this happen, and one, of course, is Malia Ashfor, Gisele Abrajeo, and, of course, our guide, Ibrahim, and then the Minister of Tourism, Mr. Nasara, and Minister of Environment, Mr. Khalid Al-Arani, and Senator Batalji. I think that it is appropriate that your article is called Crossing Jordan, and it's a great intro to this very special place.
Thanks, Roy. It was a pleasure to write it, and you mentioned that it was a journey in a journal. It certainly seemed like a journal to me the last few days, putting down all my thoughts, but I really enjoyed the process because it brought back a lot of wonderful memories of our trip there.
It certainly did, and the title of your opening article is Crossing Jordan, Wisdom, Enlightenment, the Euphoria of the Hashemite Kingdom. And you start out, lucky little Jordan in the middle of a tough neighborhood stuck between Iraq and a hard place. Why don't we go from there?
Well, as you know, Roy, we were rather surprised that the trip took place at all, considering the background of, you know, the problems in the Middle East last summer. But I think the fact that we were invited by the JTB really kind of underscores that point I was trying to make. They are a plucky little country. They're determined to get the word out to the world that it's a safe country, that it's a country that is hospitable, has a tremendous amount of things to offer, and if you can kind of get past that initial misperception, I really think that it is a misperception that Jordan is a dangerous place, that it's
right.
An unwise choice to make for the traveler today. I think you're in for a tremendously rewarding and enriching experience with some wisdom. How does it go? Wisdom, enlightenment, and euphoria all thrown into the mix.
You got it. And as you mentioned in your article, you, in fact, were in Rome at the time when you were advised that we were going to do this trip. And we all sort of sat back and thought about it a little while and possibly a little apprehensive at first, but that certainly changed, didn't it?
For sure. I mean, I know when I found out, you could have pushed me over with a feather. And when I did get back to Canada very briefly after being in Italy all summer and then just in time to really pack my bags to go to Jordan again, people were looking at me, friends and family were kind of questioning my judgment, if not my sanity, because, you know, the news from the Middle East was disturbing. There's no doubt about it. And, of course, Jordan is in that neighborhood. But once we got there, we found that it really was an oasis of peace. The people were extremely hospitable, friendly, welcoming to us. You know, I'm Canadian, but most of the group that we're traveling with were Americans. They didn't find any kind of anti-American feeling at all. I've traveled in a number of countries, and I would put Jordan right up at the top in terms of just the genuine friendliness.
I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Gisele was on the program, as you know. She mm-hmm. opened it for us, and mm-hmm. You know, she said, as you mentioned in your article as well, that they felt that they just had to do something about this. And as you say, the plucky take risks image, that this was probably, in fact, the best time to challenge some of these misinterpretations.
Yes. No, I think that's right. And once you're there, really, I just found that any anxieties I might have had just completely melted away. We were treated so well. We really were crossing Jordan in the sense that, I mean, we were shown all of the highlights of that country, and there are so many, and we feature them in a number of the mini articles that Bob Fisher and I prepared. The city of Amman itself, the capital, a very sophisticated city, the Roman city of Jerash to the north, Wadi Rum, where we spent a memorable night out in the desert with the Bedouins, and then the places I talk about, Petra, which really is the archaeological showcase of Jordan, the Nabataean Rose City, carved right out of the rocks of the mountains. It's just an incredible place to visit. I also talk about Aqaba and the whole history of Lawrence of Arabia, the Dead Sea, the beautiful mosaics that can be found in the churches and Mount Nebo. In the Jordan's history dates back thousands of years. You know, as a history teacher, I could go on and have to kind of keep it brief, but there are so many different periods of history to experience in Jordan, and such a rich cultural and archaeological treasure trove that I think it could satisfy just about anyone with an interest in the past.
And of course, as Giuseppe mentioned earlier, that people don't realize it's a very small country.
That's right.
And I think you, in your article, you say it's like 96,000 square kilometers.
Mm-hmm. And it's not very big. Much of it in the eastern part, of course, bordering Iraq, is desert. So it doesn't. There are a few highlights of interest there. But when you think of it, we were able to really visit most of the main sites in Jordan by comfortable bus trips. There were no really long distances to cover. The scenery was always interesting. The infrastructure, roads and other facilities, is very well developed. So once you're there, I think it's quite doable to see the main sites, to really cross Jordan in probably a week or a week and a half, to see all of the most interesting attractions. And of course, you know, there are so many.
And of course, the great job that King Abdullah II has carried on after the death of his father in 1999 is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, the monarchy is certainly an institution for stability and social progress in Jordan. And you may remember the day we were on our way on the bus to the Crusader Castle of Karak, and the king was actually, his motorcade was going through to visit, I think he was on a opening some facility in the town.
Yes,
we actually had a chance to see him, and you could tell by the response of the people that he is a popular leader, and let's just hope that the policies he's trying to put forward for the development of his own country and for working for greater peace and resolution of the conflicts in the Middle East, let's hope he's successful.
Right, exactly. And you know, this is not a political show, but
no.
But when we look at this, and this is a monarchy,
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, it seemed very democratic to me.
Oh, I think they are introducing democracy. You know, I think we have to recognize that each country will come to democracy on its own, by way of its own path, and
right.
it's probably not a wise move to impose one particular view. I won't go too far with that, Roy, especially today after the midterm elections in your country, but certainly Jordan, you know, is working towards democracy. They have a parliament. Women, for example, have pretty much equal rights with men. Sure, they're not all the way there, but they know that that's the direction they want to move in, and my view is that we should encourage it, and I think with tourism and travel, you know, that's a great democratizing agent for everywhere in the world, and Jordan, no exception to that.
I think it's a great example, and I think that people, especially in the U.S., you know, they see democracy one way, and they see monarchies in another.
Yeah. But don't forget, Canada's a monarchy too, Roy, so I'm quite comfortable with
a
democratic constitutional monarch. I'm used to that here.
Now that you're the monarch? Or?
Well, that would be even better. But
well, let's move on to this. We have time, Peter. All of your articles in this particular group are terrific, but let's touch on Petra. I think that you call it the Rose City of Petra, is one of the greatest and most beautiful archaeological sites in the world. let's go from there. Let's chat about Petra.
Well, Petra really is unique. I visited a number of ancient sites and Pompeii and other places in Italy and Spain. I really would have to say that of all of them, Petra would be number one. Just the way you enter the city, there's an aura of mystery to it, and even in broad daylight, you may recall how we were walking through the Sikh, which is this narrow kind of opening or chasm really between the rock faces, and your anticipation builds as you know you're going to see the treasury, which is, you know, on every picture of tourist poster of Jordan. But even though you know what you're going to see, there's no way to really describe the experience of actually seeing it emerge from this little crack of light. And it was just stunning. I mean, and then there are so many. Once you're sort of past the initial excitement of the treasury, there are so many other places to explore. It's a huge site. Only 10% of it has been excavated. And I think I say in the article, probably most tourists who go there will maybe only spend a day or half a day. And that would really be kind of not doing it the justice it deserves. I think you could, like we did, spend two or three days, stay in one of the hotels nearby, and really don't try to skimp on. It's an experience that you have to savor. The Nabataeans are a mysterious people. There's still a lot of questions, a lot of mystery about what the city was for, who the people were who built it. But once you've seen it and you realize that this was just literally hewn out of these monumental buildings were hewn out of the solid rock, it's an incredible place.
And in fact, we stayed at the Mövenpick,
which the
ambiance sort of fit the whole area, didn't it? They've done a very good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you walked, and Pierre and I went by. We had a one-eyed horse in a carriage, I think.
Well, there's many different animals you could ride on in Petra. That's part of the experience. Remember, we had horse carts.
Right.
There were donkeys available. And then,
right,
of course, there was the famous camel race, which I talk about in the article,
by
a certain Mr. Fisher. But it's just that it's an experience that, like, there's history. There's the enjoyment of the different kinds of animals that you can ride on or look at. There's also hiking. We went on a number of hikes of varying degrees of physical strenuousness. But there's something for everyone. There's even a wonderful restaurant right in the middle of the site, the basin, where you can have an excellent lunch and kind of rest up if you're spending the whole day there. It does get hot,
right,
as I say in the article, and bottled water is really kind of a necessity. But when we were there, I found that the heat was definitely not oppressive. And also, it was kind of, in a way, sad that the tourism had taken a bit of a hit this summer in Jordan, because there weren't as many visitors as would normally be the case. But in a way, for us, that made the site all that much more magical, because I've been in Pompeii, and it can be overrun at times with tour groups. And Petra it's a bigger site, but it was really possible to get the feeling that you were there in an ancient civilization with very few reminders of the 21st century around.
Yeah, we were very fortunate in that respect.
Yeah.
And I was also surprised that the people who were working in the area, we weren't overwhelmed by it. I mean,
This is it. The Bedouin who live there, of course, and many of them work there, they depend on the tourists for their livelihood,
right.
And I could tell that they were hurting, and, you know, I bought perhaps a few more little souvenirs and things that I might normally, but there was certainly no hard sell. There was no pushiness about it. They made us aware of the fact that, the lack of tourism was not good for the local economy, and we were doing the best we could. But I never once, and that goes for Jordan really as a whole, at first, with the friendliness of the people, you know, you're sometimes suspicious, well, what is this all about? Is there some kind of, scam going on here? Are they doing this because they want your dollars? Really, that was not the case in Jordan anywhere. These people's friendliness, and I think it does go back to their kind of Arab Bedouin traditions, that you really have to be hospitable to someone, you know, when you're living in that kind of desert environment, because you never know when the next time you may need someone else's hospitality, and it can be a matter of life or death.
Well, that's exactly right.
Not that way now, but they've continued that, and that's certainly part of their character.
And we found that out at another place, in fact, when your hat blew off into a moat.
Yeah, that's right.
And two young boys ran down there with you, and you were very brave going down this walkway, and helped you retrieve the hat. And I don't even think they even asked for anything.
I offered them a dinar, which, you know, was about $1.50 or so, and they just said no, that was fine. They were happy to do it. I mean, this
exactly.
is the kind of thing that you find in Jordan all the time.
And you don't find it many other places
not
in the world,
many.
That's for sure.
No,
it's quite the opposite.
Right. Yeah.
But it's also interesting that how certain places are made popular by Hollywood. And in,
right.
this, and in this case, of course, it was Indiana Jones
mm-hmm.
and the Last Crusade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But and so the Treasury has become famous for that. And just a quick antidote, I had sent some copies of the slideshow to some of the younger people that I knew, and one of them came up to me one day and said, "Roy, I was showing the photos of Petra and the Treasury," and I said mm-hmm. to one of my friends, "That's where the Indiana Jones movie was made." And he said, "No way!"
Yeah.
And he said, "I went over and I got a copy of the VCR or the mm-hmm. The DVD, mm-hmm. and I showed it to him." And the guy said, "Wow, that's really cool."
Well, you know, some people would probably think it was a Hollywood set or maybe even a computer-generated design of
absolutely.
Some a futuristic idea of an ancient site. No, it's real, and I think that's certainly one of the big selling points for Petra. But, you know, the Treasury, of course, is a magnificent way to begin it, but as I do say in the article, that really is just the hors d'oeuvre. I mean, the Petra
yep.
is a feast
yep.
For the senses and for the mind, and really to spend a short time and just go and see the Treasury and maybe a couple of other places in an hour or two visit, I think would be really shortchanging yourself.
Well, and you make another interesting point, and that is Petra on foot is strongly recommended.
Yes. For those who have the energy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you can take it at your own pace.
Yeah.
The hardest part of the walk really is back up and out of
That's
Petra.
True.
But
mm-hmm.
you, at that point, if you want, you can get a horse and carriage.
You can. Mm-hmm.
But the walk
air
through...
air-conditioned taxi, remember, Roy? That's
yes.
what they called them.
Exactly. But the strolling, you can take at your own pace. And as you say, as we got to the bottom, or I don't know if to the bottom, but at the end of it at one point, there was a charming air-conditioned restaurant, which
mm-hmm.
was very welcome
mm-hmm.
when we got there. And
served an excellent lunch.
Yeah, and Pierre Wolf and I chatted about that a little bit earlier, and that was fun. Now, you say that the archaeological explorations began during the 1920s,
mm-hmm.
and obviously are continuing today. We
mm-hmm.
saw some of that,
mm-hmm.
And what's also amazing, of course, is that it is only 10% of Petra
right.
that has been uncovered or
yeah.
investigated at this point.
Yeah, some of it, of course, is being excavated, and there have been some flukes of nature, too. I don't know if you recall on the way in when we were walking through the Sikh, one of the guides, it was Ibrahim, pointed out that there'd been a flash flood of water that had gone through a few years ago, and what that had done, sometimes the floods do damage to the ruins, but in this particular case, it had washed away some debris, exposing an ancient sculpture that had been like a relief sculpture carved right into the rock of a group of camels and camel herders, and that dated all the way from the time of the Nabataean civilization, over 2,000 years, and archaeologists didn't even know that that was there. So
that
is one of the rare places for archaeology where there are surprises probably still buried there, still to come. Some of the things that are still kind of question marks now, the answers are probably just lying there waiting to be discovered. And
well,
I think for anyone interested in archaeology, that's a fascinating and exciting idea.
Yeah, in fact, I spoke to a young couple that were working on that, and I thought that was
mm-hmm.
really it was quite
yes,
interesting.
Yes, I remember you mentioned that. So, you know, and there's always the problem, of course, when archaeologists are excavating and tourists are visiting, and I think this is something that the Jordan Tourist Board is dealing with probably quite effectively, more so than in some places like Pompeii, I regret to say, where the kind of the conflicting interests of the archaeologists and the tourists have to be balanced and there has to be some kind of compromise. Petra is a wonderful site. It deserves to be visited by large numbers of people from all over the world. Jordan really does depend largely on tourism for its economic development, but at the same time, you can kill the goose that laid the golden egg. If you will let a tourist overrun a place, the archaeologists won't be able to work, and eventually the site will deteriorate. I think from what I've seen, they're doing a very good job of sort of squaring that circle and balancing both
right.
the interest group, and let's hope they'll be able to continue with that.
And you also mentioned, of course, on your walk, bring some bottled water along, because
yes, definitely.
That's a very important.
And it's
part.
Available on site. Remember that pretty much everywhere you turn, you can buy water, you can buy tea. It's possible to keep yourself comfortable and not overdo it if you just take a few little precautions.
Right. Now, you did a couple of other things. We all did. Some of us did. Some of us didn't. But you went to the Petra by night.
Yes. Sermon. And that, I talk about that in the article, too. That
right.
was just a magical evening. You go back along the Sikh under the cover of darkness. The whole path is illuminated by, I forget how many, it was thousands of little candles that are covered with brown paper bags, but they give off this kind of wonderful warm glow, and the gentleman who took us through, I was sure he was a Brit, because he had an accent that sounded like it came right out of London, but he was Jordanian. He'd served in the British forces, a middle-aged gentleman who was extremely knowledgeable, and he asked us to be quiet as we walked through, and it really gave a kind of aura of mystery and majesty to the whole place, that it was just like so wonderful. The experience was like nothing else I've ever enjoyed. And we got to the in front of the treasury when we finally entered the sort of main area. We sat down on rugs that had been put down for us. There was a Bedouin who sang and played some music, and we drank tea. The whole experience didn't last very long, but it was just one of those things that you wouldn't want to miss if you're staying over. And that again
right.
underscores my point that if you were just to be there for the day, you wouldn't have a chance to go to Petra by night, and it really would be a shame, I think, because it was just a perfect night. The stars were shining; you could see the glow of the moon off the rock, and it was wonderful. As I say, I've been to many ancient sites before. I've never had any kind of experience that could come close to that, just for the magic of it.
Now, you were one of the hardy souls who decided. The next day, and the second day that we were there, to take this 5-hour hike from Little Petra to the
That's
monastery.
Right.
Tell us
yeah.
a little bit about that.
Well, that was quite an endurance test. We knew that it was going to be demanding, and we were prepared for it. This is one of the hikes that I would definitely not at all advise anyone to try on your own without a Bedouin guide who knows the terrain. And fortunately, we had an excellent one. It's partly trails, but partly is climbing up cliff faces and, you know, scrabbling through rock, and it was a challenge. There was one particular part, which again, we were warned about, or advised about, maybe I should say, where there was a ledge that we had to sort of not crawl across, but very carefully, very gingerly ease ourselves across while gripping the rock face in front of us, because there was a fairly steep drop off. Now, this is not something that you'd probably find in the American or Canadian Rockies, but it was only a few feet, and I was relieved when it was over. There was really no danger. The guide was, there was a ledge above where he could sort of perch himself and hold on to anyone who might be, you know, having any kind of problem. And we all got through, and I was very relieved to hear that they haven't lost a single person yet on that part of hike. But once that part was over, we got to the monastery, which I guess next to the treasury is probably the most significant individual building in Petra. And there's a little cafe right across from it. It's kind of like a Turkish coffee place where you can recline on a camel saddle. And I think there's actually a picture of Bob and I really enjoying the fact that the most difficult part of the hike was over. And we were sipping the coffee and admiring the monastery. And I just said to him, I can't think that anything can get better than this. It was just one of those wonderful moments of sheer exhilaration and relaxation. Roy, I'd go back to Jordan tomorrow if
right.
I could.
Well, I think Giselle would be happy to have you go along.
Yes, well.
But having said what you did previously, that you thought that, you know, you'd never seen anything, this is the greatest experience you've had.
But then there were others, of course,
well,
after that.
I think let's take a moment to do that.
Sure.
We then went on to the... We did three things, actually. We went to we did more than that, but I think if we touched on the Wadi Rum desert and also Red and Dead Sea,
yeah.
Let's go to the desert for the moment.
Well, let's go to the desert. You know, Bob Fisher, who's written the article about Wadi Rum and
right.
he earned the nickname the Prophet, I think he would go back to the desert and spend the rest of his life there. Because it was another one of those peak experiences. We were driven in on four-wheel drive vehicles in the heat of the day. We stopped for tea along the way. We reached our camp where the Bedouin had everything set up for us. I mean, people might think when I told people that we spent a night in the desert, they seem to think we were really roughing it. Well, believe me, I've camped in North America in more primitive facilities than that. We had these goat hair tents. You could sleep inside, or you could choose, like I did, to sleep right outside. It was a beautiful evening. We had a wonderful feast. You recall that the Bedouin made za'arab, which is a very traditional dish that they actually bake the meat and the rice right in the desert sands and then dig it up and serve it at night. It was just tremendous. The evening was magical. Again, the moon was shining. It was a full moon. Wasn't very cold. I slept peacefully. At least I thought I was sleeping peacefully. Some people claim that I snore. I don't know whether that's true or not. But
we were
all sleeping out under the stars. The next morning we had a wonderful breakfast. Again, the Bedouin provided that. And it was just spending the night out in the desert where you can really... The silence is almost like a sound. It was so tranquil. It was the best... calmer downer that I can imagine, and I would recommend it to anyone to try it.
Well, there were two things. I thought the snoring was coming from the camel.
that was my story too, Roy, and I'm sticking to it.
and of course, we thought there for a moment that Bob Fisher was the Messiah being.
Well, you may recall that he and I really got inspired, and we were in native dress, and I do remember that morning. He'd gone out at sunrise to commune with the camels, and when he came back with his arms extended, it was almost like Moses parting the waters. I thought he'd received some kind of a spiritual revelation while he was out there. But, you know, we joke about it, Roy, but there really is, I think, for anyone who appreciates the majesty of nature, and I'm sure a lot of people have, you know, we're talking of Hollywood films, anyone who's seen Lawrence of Arabia, which was filmed there, right there, in Wadi Rum, you can really get a sense of the majesty of the desert. And the desert, it's a forbidding environment, yes, it can be very hot, it can be very dry, but there's also a beauty to it that is indescribable, and you really have to be there to get a sense of how the light changes from day to evening to night and then to dawn. It's just a beautiful
quite
beautiful
magnificent day. Now of course for those listening, if you go to youtube.com and type in the upper right hand corner, you type in travel, some of the videos that we did, which I thought some came out quite well.
They did.
And there's some funny ones as well, so you can check it there. But let's just go right down to the Red Sea and over to the Dead Sea.
Right. Well, you may recall that after Wadi Rum, we went to Aqaba, which is, again, a very different kind of place. It's the only saltwater outlet, unless you count the Dead Sea. It's certainly the Jordan's only outlet to a major waterway, and Aqaba is a very important port. It has a lot of history associated with Lawrence of Arabia and the Arab Revolt that I talk about in my article. It's a modern resort. We stayed in a wonderful, again, a Mövenpick hotel. Had a lovely meal, you may recall, at the Jordan Yacht Club in the evening. We were taken on a glass-bottomed boat. There's a lot to do there for anyone who enjoys water sports. There's snorkeling, there's diving, and certainly the beaches are beautiful. And the thing about Aqaba, of course, is that you really get a sense that you're right there in the Middle East, because the Israeli resort of Eilat is clearly visible right across the water, and then you have Egypt further down on one side, you have Saudi Arabia a little further down on the other side, so it's kind of where all the Middle East really comes together. And I found that we weren't in Aqaba very long, but our stay there was really quite enjoyable and rewarding. And then from there we took the Dead Sea Highway up through all of the biblical treasures of Jordan. We passed Lot's cave, we saw the pillar, which is supposed to have been where Lot's wife was turned into a pillar of salt, the sites of Sodom and Gomorrah, and then we reached the actual resort area of the Dead Sea with all of the wonderful hotels and spas there. It's a place, again, where Jordanians like to go to relax on the weekend, and tourists from all over the world come there. The Dead Sea itself is something not to be missed. You can't really swim, as I say. You kind of really float more than anything else. The water is pretty salty, but the resorts are just, you know, state of the art, and I experienced some, you know, wonderful treatments there. You can have massage, you can have all kinds of mud treatments, you know, anything that people like you and I, Roy, don't have to worry too much about our beauty, but
right,
those who are concerned, you know, there are ways of enhancing it, and certainly the Dead Sea is it's a great spot for anyone interested in that kind of, you know, health-related tourism, and it shouldn't be missed. I mean, the Dead Sea is it's a unique place in the world. It's the lowest point on the planet, and it's something to see. It's probably the hottest place we were in Jordan.
Yeah, it was. But, it was warm while we were
it
there.
It was more
sure.
humid there than I think we'd experienced anywhere else.
Right.
But as I talk in the article about this is maybe one of the other YouTubes about our last dinner when we were invited to the we were staying there at the Marriott, but
right.
we were invited to the Mövenpick for our
dinner,
final
yeah.
dinner, and that experience will remain etched in my memory. The meal was wonderful. It was a beautiful evening. We were sitting outside, and then, of course, you may recall the belly dancer who put on quite a show, and she's figured in, I believe, one of the videos that
yep.
Is attached to my article. So
yep.
it was just a perfect way to end our trip to Jordan.
Well, and the other thing that amazed me is that at the Sea Resort, which is not a long drive from Amman and where people go for the weekends, that the ladies, who are usually in different garb in the city, suddenly get down into their bikinis and bathing suits like everybody else.
Well, that's right, and I think, again, Jordan is a place where any preconceptions that you may have about the Middle East or the Arab world in general are going to be shattered. It's an extremely modern country, and,
yeah.
and women are very free compared to
and
other parts of that.
And very beautiful as well.
And yes, I'm sure you and I both noticed that, Roy.
Peter, I thank you very much. Great
it's
articles.
It's always a pleasure, Roy. As I say, this just makes me want to go back there.
I know. I wish it was a shorter plane ride.
Yes, that's the only thing, but any of your listeners who are considering Jordan and have any hesitations about it, I hope that they will, if they, you know, listen to today, to the broadcast, or will look at some of the articles that are on the site, they will see that it's a place with a tremendous amount to offer, and I think that they should give it really serious consideration as a unique and enriching travel destination.
Peter, great articles, great photos, we appreciate your input. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, Roy.
Bye for now.
With you. Bye now.
Peter Flaherty, and when we come back, Bob Fisher, our associate producer, will be with us. So hang in there.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and Bob Fisher is going to be with us here, and he's associate producer and travel journalist, and he is a traveling man. Hi, Bob.
How are you doing?
We're doing okay.
I need to correct an error, by the way.
Correct
what? I did not win the camel race. Deli and I crossed the finish line at exactly the same moment.
She'll be... You know what? We need to get her back on the phone and tell her that, because I think she was very upset that she thought she lost her first race.
Well, she knows that neither of us lost, and, I mean, look, this is pretty important, and so anyway, just as long as people know that it was a fair race, and we both crossed the finish line at exactly the same time. So I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Well,
I want to go back to Jordan for one thing.
Well, exactly, and if you want to get invited back, you better make that absolutely clear about this race.
Right.
Bob, first of all, you're just back from the Czech Republic, which I'm sure was a marvelous trip, and you must still be sort of jet-lagged, but we thought we'd wind up the show, which has been a really great show. We've had a few technical problems, but basically we've had some really great guests and covered a lot of ground. What I thought we'd chat about with you about what the Jordan Tourism Board and what the plan is, but as you see it, how do you see the mission? I mean, they're really working hard at this, and I think you mentioned that there are many lessons to be learned by other travel tourism markets, as well as by the general public, who, as rightly so, probably are not generally aware that travel and tourism is perhaps, next to agriculture, the largest industry on the planet.
Yeah, and I think, and it's, even though, you know, you especially have been working in this business for a long time, Peter and all the others, you know, we're in the travel journalists, but we have to keep reminding ourselves of this lesson that it is, anytime anywhere, anyone goes anywhere on this planet, the travel and tourism industry is involved. And you mentioned that, I'm just back from the Czech Republic, where I was at the annual congress of the Federation of International Journalists and Travel Writers, and 315 people who are very involved with all the day-to-day issues of this business, this enormous business. And I've got in my hand what we all received, which is this wonderful book, The Jordan National Tourism Strategy, 2004 to 2010. I just want to make the point that of all the things we experienced, that I experienced in Jordan and appreciated, what I learned most was that Jordan is a modern, enlightened, very progressive nation, especially from a business perspective. And you know, we have these fixed notions and perceptions, and you know, Peter went into this in his articles, his main overview article, which he called Middle Eastern Perceptions and Perspectives.
Right.
Well, I have rarely seen a country and a tourist board that has a long-term business strategy as well-developed as the one I'm holding in my hand. Jordan is a role model, in my opinion, for so many destinations. And if I can just quote from right the very beginning of it, their mission statement, which you referred to, and it says, Jordan will develop a sustainable tourism and economy through a partnership of government, the private sector, and civil society to expand employment, entrepreneurial opportunity, social benefits, industrial profits, and state revenue.
Right.
Well, you know, this is extremely enlightened. These are people who really know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're on top of it.
And in everything we saw, and I've been listening to the program and listening to you and Pierre and Peter, et cetera, and talking about all those experiences we had. And the reason, part of the reason that they were so good is because there's an industry behind it. There are professionals running those hotels, running the restaurants, running the tours that really know what they're doing.
And very passionate about the destination.
Exactly, exactly. And they have every reason to be, too. This is, as Peter pointed out, and you pointed out, you know, the size of this country, but it is unlimited in terms of what you can do. They make the statement in their business plan that Jordan is a destination with many iconic tourist attractions. Well, iconic attractions, we're talking the equivalent of the pyramids or the Forum in Rome. And when I was listening to you and Peter talk about Petra and the treasury and all those places, these are once in a lifetime experiences, and they are, that's what's at the wealth, that's the wealth of the tourism in Jordan. And it was interesting, they point out in their document too that according to the World Tourism Organization, the global tourism market's going to triple in size by 2020. Well, that's not that far off.
Right.
And so you can understand why tourist boards all over the planet, entire nations, are, despite all the problems and despite all the fears that people have of traveling,
right. Well,
are not going to stop.
The tourism boards from obviously every country has one, and I think that over the years they've got a bit complacent about their destination selling itself.
Yes,
as
right,
where
right.
Jordan has looked at this long term and said, wait a minute, we need to get on top of this. We need to get out there. We need to tell the people what this is all about. Get the media, which, you know, people like ourselves and others, mm-hmm. let them help us get the word out. and let's advertise it. Let's put some money behind it. Because if we don't, it's not going to take care of itself, especially with the surrounding problems. Now, they've even taken it a step further where they are just not looking at just the average tourist, but there's other stuff in the business plan, such as things that you've mentioned, is filming and photography, yes, festivals, cultural events. All of these things put together bring in the money that's necessary from this industry.
And the money that goes in goes back out, and you have, and that's the sustainability of it, and the social benefits. And the social benefits, obviously, are for the people of Jordan, but they're also for the entire region.
Well, and exactly. It increases.
And that's what travel, and I know I'm talking to the converted, because you know this very well, that's what a really smart travel and tourism industry does for any country, any island, any city.
And of course,
I found it very interesting, if I can just that Jordan is also, that they're very precise, they're in this entire business strategy, and they've identified priority niche markets, which are cultural heritage, archaeology, the religious tourism, and as you and Peter discussed, I mean, this is a biblical land, ecotourism. And people wouldn't think of the Middle East as ecotourism, and yet there's some really good programs going on there. The whole health and wellness thing, which is a whole new area of travel and tourism, adventure travel, and the, Gisele mentioned it, it's, the acronym is MICE, and meetings, incentives, conferences, and events, because international business is precisely that.
Right.
And in my opinion, Jordan is one of the places I've been recently that is the best set up in terms of international corporate business, where people go to have conferences and incentive travel.
Well, as you know, I've been in this industry a long time, and it's been a while since I've seen anyone as aggressive as this Jordan Tourism Board, and they're certainly heading in the right direction. Now, let's just talk about the misperception of Jordan as an unsafe destination.
And this is part of, you may remember an editorial I wrote for Talking Travel, in which I talked about the fixed notion. And someone said to me recently, if you start out with a bad attitude at a place, you're going to have a bad time when you get there. But we do have fixed notions. You know, and you and I and Peter experienced this. You know, people said, where are you going? We said, we're going to the Middle East. They said, what, are you crazy? Well, but that fixed notion was simply wrong. And Peter's article, Middle Eastern Perceptions and Perspectives, what we got, and especially standing out there 6 o'clock in the morning in Wadi Rum, perspective. We got a whole new perspective on how this industry of travel and tourism has demonstrated itself in, as Peter said, plucky little Jordan. And yet, it is a major part of the new global business world. But it doesn't forget the fundamentals. And again, a statement in their business plan says, and this is right from the king down, that tourism should deliver the optimum benefit to the economy, people, and communities of Jordan. And they don't forget that for example, at Petra or Wadi Rum, that when you bring tourists in, there's going to be an impact on the environment, and they're being extremely smart about that.
The social impact.
Right, exactly. And what and you remember the collectives of Bedouin women, and all of us bought something. Well, here's a micro industry within this country, where these women who make beautiful things. I bought a really nice necklace for Diane, and something for her mother-in-law too. And these are Bedouin women in the desert who do great artifacts. But what the Jordan government has done is they've created a collective of these women. So they're improving their standard of living. And that, of course, when it's done well, as it is done in Jordan, travel and tourism improves the lot of everybody. And I was just so taken with that in Jordan.
You know, the tourism enterprise is investing in the skill development and training of their people, and they seem to be doing that. And another important thing which you happened to send a note to me on, and it's so real, we find out in this country, is that these facilities should also be open to the residents, and not just open, but made aware of them, as we do our national parks and everything else. This is an important issue.
Right. And it's really a global issue, too. And I think Jordan is again, in some respects, leading the way, certainly in that part of the world, and saying that the wealth that we have here in terms of the nature and our archaeological sites, these are important to the people of Jordan, but they're also important to the people of the world. And that's why I know you, Peter, and I are totally convinced now that that's what Jordan has to offer.
And as you've always mentioned, in this very fragmented and complex industry, travel and tourism in parenthesis, the single universal commonality among all public and private stakeholders is the traveler who seeks to navigate seamlessly around the globe.
Right. And it's, as a former teacher, travel is the highest form of experiential learning. And, you know, we were students of the Jordanian people. We were students of the Jordanian environment. And to all those people in Jordan, every one of them, that we learned something from each one of them and from each experience.
If you had to sum it up in the next few seconds, what would your comment be?
I would say that it was, for me, one of the most sublime travel experiences that I've had in the last 20 years. And I'm with Peter. There's a flight leaving at 6 o'clock, and I could be on it.
Bob, I thank you very much. Welcome home. And thank you for your contribution to this, as always.
Talk to you later.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for our special and salute to Jordan today. I hope you've all enjoyed it as we have, and of course we've got to enjoy the experience. Now you have the opportunity to experience it as well, and you can get more information by going to the Jordan Tourism Board .org and go to the website and ttrn.com. There's great photos, great slideshows, movie segment narrated by Peter Greenberg. You're listening to Talking Travel on the Voice of Travel, live from Travel Talk Radio Network. Look for your favorite guest by going to our program schedule icon on ttrn.com. Next week, Evan Eggers, Wonder Woman Suzanne Wright, Neela Schwartzberg, L. Andra Warner. Until then, this is Roy Lowy saying bye for now and happy travels.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at ttrn.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.